Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Breaking Mike podcast. Today we're here with Rex, and Rex is a life coach, and he's got what appears to be quite an interesting past, which we'll get into, and I'm very interested to hear about. And we're just going to have a talk about, I don't know, whatever comes about, really. We'll just see how it goes. Rex, how you doing? You good?
Doing good, yeah.
Good.
Been talking about my past quite a lot recently, and it's really nice to relive it and see things in new lights and actually, for the first time, acknowledge what I've actually gone through. Yeah. And not just brush it off thinking, that's fine, other people had it worse.
Absolutely. You've 100%, yeah. You've got to do that. You've got to recollect and process and go through. So tell the people, what led you to this point? What has been your journey? As much as you're comfortable saying. Well,
yeah, I'm quite an open book. So about two years and 2 months ago, I got sober. Mm-hmm. I've been struggling with addiction for about 9 years. 3 years was quite bad, and 3 months was horrible. Like 3 day benders, sleep 6 hours, same again for 3 months. I was lying, I was stealing, I was doing anything I could do to get more my hands on more drugs and alcohol. And then my kind of turning point was my brother acknowledging that I try to get sober and seeing me in that attempt. And not judging me, just accepting me there and saying, okay, it's time you get proper help. And that was the point which started me on my whole personal development journey. Because mm-hmm. I went into rehab with the knowing that I need to understand why I became an addict if I'm going to change. Mm. And that need for knowledge and understanding has continued on these past 2 years.
Yeah.
Got into a relationship. I was still showing up in very unhealthy ways. Looking at other women, chatting, my energy was very much scattered. So I went on a feminine cleanse after it ended to try and figure out why I was always seeking outside approval mm-hmm. rather than myself. And I've done a lot of work in being able to be in my body presently and not need anything else to numb it down, to push it down, to escape, to try and run away from it and actually be able to hold what I'm feeling. And be okay with it.
That's brilliant. That's so important. If you don't mind me asking, what was life like before you became an addict? What was your childhood like? Was there any trauma? Was there any early exposure? What happened? Where did it, you know?
Yeah, I don't mind at all. So from the outside in, my childhood looked incredible. Mm-hmm. Beautiful family, went on holidays. We didn't argue. No alcoholics in the house. Beautiful home, always had food on the table. But I felt abandoned. And I could never receive the love my family gave me. They would always say, oh, you're a beautiful boy. We love you. We appreciate you. But I could never feel that. So I didn't. I thought they just had to say it because they were my family.
Okay.
I wasn't able to actually hold that love they were giving me. So from a very young age, I'd always go walk about. The saying when I was growing up was always, where's Rex? So I didn't feel seen. So I just go off and try and make myself happy, try and meet my own needs. And then that kind of grew on to moving around different schools, never felt seen in any school. So I'd always mess around, get in trouble, get kicked out or asked to leave. And then that was also an attempt to get attention from my family. So I had that feeling of seen because I couldn't receive that love. I got attention in another way. And then that progressed on when I left schools, bouncing around lots of different jobs. And then I felt confident. I felt seen. I felt energized when I was using cocaine and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And that's what led it to get so bad. Because it gave me that feeling that I never had.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair enough. Cocaine, I mean, I've never done cocaine and I don't really drink alcohol, but I know that alcohol, you know, it feels like it takes all your problems away, doesn't it? It's such a break. Yeah. And cocaine, I think Jordan Peterson, who I've seen that you follow, so we'll definitely talk about him because I think he's very relevant.
Love him.
Love him, yeah, 100%. He talks about what cocaine does is it triggers the sort of dopamine response. So, you know, that feeling when you're, I imagine you seem like quite a switched on, hardworking guy. So you're very sort of sensitive to that feeling of a progression and development. And that's what cocaine does. It makes you feel that to an intense level, and it's sort of that's why you're all hyped up and jumpety, and I can see how you could become addicted to that feeling, and then when the downs are without that, and if you feel unheard and not seen, and as you said, disembodied, that, you know, it's like all addiction, I suppose, it's that escape. And it's about learning, as you just talked about a little bit ago, how you can feel comfort and contentment and peace within through other avenues. And that feeling can actually be more powerful and better than the hedonism that drugs and alcohol can, the hedon sort of hedonistic attributes of drug and alcohol. So it's, I think, Was it the people in the job, or was it just?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
So I started off working in kitchens.
Okay.
So I started off working in kitchens, then became a ski instructor, which is a very much drinking culture. Then I tried maybe 10 different jobs, worked all of them for maybe 6 months, then got bored and then tried something new. Yeah. So I was never satisfied because as soon as I stopped being challenged and I felt I'd learned everything, I lost interest and I got distracted and went to more drugs.
And
it's very, very true what you said about that kind of that liveness you feel when you are heavily drinking or using cocaine.
Yeah.
You feel like this go energy, like you just go and take on the world.
That's a good way of putting it, and take on the world. And if you're an ambitious person and, you know, that can become quite addicting, and it's about learning how you can feel that feeling without those substances involved. What were you going to say?
That there is an ongoing process
of course.
Learning to kind of hold that energy and also not always need that energy.
Mm-hmm.
So be able to be okay and accept when you are feeling low. It's taken me a long time to do some human design readings to understand that I'm an emotional being, so I go up and down.
I always
wanted to stay up here, which was why I took cocaine, alcohol, and drugs, and sex, and the rest of it, so I could stay at this peak. Anytime I started dipping down, I'd try and boost myself back up.
Yeah.
And it's important that you allow yourself to come back down, because then you can recharge, re-energize, and then come back up in a healthy way.
Yeah,
and keep flowing. And it's taken me up until recently to be okay with the downs.
Yeah,
and I've noticed that once I accept the downs, it's okay, I'm feeling this way. It doesn't have to be a reason why. I'm just feeling this way. Then I come back up.
Yeah.
If I fight against it and try and pull myself out, then I just stay there.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, there's the you know the song "That's Life" by Frank Sinatra. Do you know that song? Have you heard of it?
Mm-hmm.
He goes. Yeah. It's really random. It's something like, you're riding high in April, shot down in May, but I don't let it get me down because this fine whole world keeps spinning around. And I think that's, whenever things are low, I just sort of say that to myself. And I'm like, that's true. Even someone as, you know, rich and had everything he possibly could have as Frank Sinatra, a god at the time, still had those peaks and waves. And he knew that. It comes back up again as it comes back down again. And to some degree, it's all just our own, not completely, but to some degree, it's all just our own, what's the word? We ascribe meaning to the ups and downs to some degree. And as you know, as much as awful things can happen in life, it's our own perception of things. And, you know, is a down really a down? Maybe you get something out of a down that you didn't realize, and you look back and go, I learned that during that down. So actually it was an up. Was it even a down, sort of in hindsight? And, you know, something bad happened during that up, and was it even an up? So, But I just sort of, I just thought that was quite funny. I didn't really put that together, but until recently, but that's cool.
Yeah, that's quite a cool lyric. And there's also something that one of my coaches said is, when you suppress one emotion, you suppress them all.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
So you can't just experience joy. If you suppress anger, fear, the rest of it, you're suppressing that joy as well. To experience the high highs, you need to experience the low lows.
Yeah, exactly. It's a full spectrum, isn't it? And no one is protected from feeling the full spectrum as much as we want to. You know, a hangover is a perfect example of that. You've got to have the high highs, you've got to have the low lows. So that is life. Although I think, meditation is something that I look at as something that is mainly good. I think the lows of meditation come in the beginning when it's hard and people struggle with it and they give up. But actually, I don't really see any downsides to something like meditation. Maybe there is, but I mean, I'd say the downsides are you're alone with your thoughts.
That's an upside for me.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, because then you're alone with your own thoughts and it gives you a chance to process them, think them through and kind of, put them into little boxes and actually piece them all together. Because when your head is just exploding full of information, people try and write things down and get out that way. But when you meditate, you can transfer some of that back into your body.
Yeah.
And then sort of move it around and slow it down and actually think things through rather than just having a racing mind.
100%. You know, that's a skill, though. A lot of people, I don't think, can do that. A lot of people struggle with that. You know, growing up in school, they would put oil and water in a jar and it would, like, separate. The only way you could keep it together is if you shake it up all the time. I always feel like the human mind is a bit like that jar of oil and water. And especially in the modern era when we've got all this stimulation going on, we can get, I don't know if you want to go down that sort of matrixy route and things like that, but you've got all this stimulation going on. They're kind of trying to keep us shooken up all the time almost so that we can't allow things to separate out. And I think that's what meditation does. It allows the water and the oil to separate out, so to speak. Let's talk about Jordan Peterson. How has he impacted you, and when did you discover him, and what caused to you about him?
But just before we get into that,
yes, of course,
I'll bring you back to that water and oil thing. So for me, the way I saw that metaphor is the oil is the mind, the water is the body.
Okay.
And through all this stimulation, you're basically, the water's just staying still. All you're using is your head. You're constantly taking information. You can't really think.
Yeah.
Whereas when you meditate, it's like you're shaking it up.
Yeah.
And everything's moving around and actually reconnecting to the body and listening. Because
that's really,
it's good. Not just our mind that thinks. We don't think just from our mind. We get ideas from our body as well.
Absolutely.
Like our spleen, our stomach. We have so many more senses and places we can gain information from than just our brain.
Yeah.
And it really, really frustrates me seeing people just doom scrolling on their phone, especially when they're in the spa, sat in a hot tub, just scrolling through. I'm like, just fucking put your phone down and be with yourself. People can't do it nowadays.
No.
Because they've never had to.
Yeah.
There's just constantly stuff coming through. So it's a little bit of vent. That's actually why I'm building my course, to allow people to be with themselves and not need outside stimulation to distract them or numb them or pull them away.
Yeah.
And that's Jordan Peterson. I saw him. Yeah, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, it's dopamine, isn't it? And we're suckers for dopamine. You know, people say, why doesn't anyone read anymore? And they used to read back then, or however many years. It's because reading would give you a dopamine hit. But now the dopamine hit from reading, it doesn't compare to the dopamine hit from going on your phone. And we're drawn to the highest level of chemical reaction or whatever in the brain, so we just go for that. And you know, in 40 years time, the way things are heading, people will look at a phone and go, well, that doesn't get, I don't use my phone anymore because it doesn't give me enough dopamine, so I'm going to use my Neuralink or whatever is going on at the moment.
They'll probably have like a little, probably. Have you seen Altered Carbon?
No.
The Spacey series. This guy has a contact lens he puts in his eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically you can see everything, and then they can use their hands to basically flip through images and stuff. That's probably what will happen in 40 years' time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
100%.
What you said is very true. We are. Yeah, just seeking as much dopamine as we can possibly get.
Absolutely.
And the phone is the quickest source.
Right.
And also, it ruins your whole body. Whole body's like natural production of it.
Does it? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, it must do, because it's not. It's like cheating, isn't it? Almost. You're cheating the body out of genuine.
Yeah. Because when you have your. Yeah. So when you put your phone down, your body's already got so much in its system, it doesn't need to produce any more. So then when that starts to taper off, or it's been used up, you start to crave more because you've been used to those high levels, whereas those high levels aren't natural.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of need some proper time away from your phone, TV, stuff, just time in nature to kind of get those leveled out again. And then
detox.
You start to feel a lot more. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I definitely find that if I've engaged in too much dopaminergic things, I like feel sluggish and I feel sick after a while, and it's the same. It's like eating too much food almost. It's, you know, and you just have to just reset and detox. And you know, it sounds very trendy, detox. I don't mean it in a trendy manner. I just mean have a break and just let, I'm guessing, let everything settle out in the brain and the body, and it all just sort itself out. Religion is something I'd like to get onto, actually, because I think it's very interesting, to the link between religion and addiction. Have you sort of dabbled in religion in any way? Has it impacted your recovery or anything? Yeah. Or?
So it's funny, when I was probably 2 years before I got sober, I was kind of groomed into a new age church. This guy like saw me on the street, came up to me and then said, okay, come here. Went there for a little bit, wasn't really for me. Then when I got sober, I did the 12 steps. In there you have to find a higher power. For me it was karma. It wasn't God or some kind of deity. It was just, if I do good things, then good things will come back to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of my higher power, is that actually led me to be honest about it. But even that I've kind of stepped back from, so I'm a little bit unsure of religion.
I think that's right.
I believe all of them have the same origin, just told in different ways. There's always some deity that comes down, and three or some important people come and witness it, bring gifts, they do miracles, they die, they come back to life. And in every religion it's the same, it's just told in different ways.
I think that religion, the concept of worship is basically a human universal. Everyone worships something, whether that be, you know, in your previous case, drugs, alcohol, whether it's nowadays, I think social media, a lot of people worship social media, they're a slave to it. And I think worship, the difference between worshipping something and being its slave can sometimes be muddled with, and it can exist on a slippery slope. I think that's a lot of the problem with religion. It's the, that they have with religion, it's the dogma and the tunnel vision thinking. But I do believe that, as you've found with karma, it wouldn't be in the 12 steps if there wasn't something to it. Having sort of belief in like a higher power is a human universal, I believe. But so is that yoga?
It's actually what differentiates us from like chimpanzees and apes, is our ability as a species to come together and believe in something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
whether it's bigger picture, like building a community in a town, or bigger as in like a god or a higher power or whatever it is. That's actually what's allowed us to evolve so much faster.
What do you mean? In what way? It's because we can come together as a community.
So it's when you come together as, so gents and stuff, they have communities, but they don't have the ability to believe in a power greater than themselves.
Okay.
Whereas we do, and that's what's allowed us to strive to greater heights.
Okay, so we've had the, John Peterson would say, we have the ability to form an ideal and then aim towards the ideal. Basically, that's kind of what you're saying, like something that we can
kind of, yeah,
sort of a thing we can aim towards.
Yeah. Used to be very much into art. I actually did quite a lot in rehab. I painted drew my addiction monster and the chakras, which I had no idea what they were.
Yeah.
I felt them inside of me.
Wow.
Moving around, and then I drew them. I was like, the hell are these? My mum points out their chakras.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what when you say addiction monster, what did that look like? Is that
so it was like a little gremlin, had a big witch's hat on, no mouth, long nose, big heavy boots, black cloak, and like long nails. And it didn't speak, it just put ideas into my head.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean,
I'd be driving along and I'd see it and it would just be putting thoughts.
Yeah.
I'm telling it to F off and go away and just keep coming back.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Everyone has like this voice in their head, don't they? That is just constantly shutting them down and listing what they believe, as in the voice believes, are your weaknesses. And I spoke about this on another podcast with someone, and a gremlin is a good way of putting it. And it's like, it's just this nagging thing, and I think it comes from your childhood maybe, and your past experiences, and maybe what you lacked growing up, and parental sort of influence, and all these different things, and it combines together to form this little toxic voice in your head that if you don't let it, if you learn how to separate it from you, if you don't learn how to do that, it can ruin you, and it can run you. And I think it does to a lot of people, to be fair. When you said your
it is there to protect you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that voice is there to protect you. And instead of separating yourself from it, learning to understand it and actually befriend it.
Okay.
And I've done a lot of, IFS, internal family system work.
Okay.
Where I've actually met some of, basically my demons, my beasts inside of me, big scary ass things. And instead of trying to fight them or kill them or push them aside, when you befriend them and allow them to see you for who you are today and actually thank them for everything they've done. So this voice in your head that says, oh, you're not worthy, you're not good enough, that's there to protect you from trying, because then you won't fail.
Mm.
Whereas if you speak to that piece saying, okay, look, I appreciate everything you've done up until this point, but I'm now this old. I want to start trying, and I would really appreciate it if you took a step back.
Mm.
However, you can always step back in if you feel we're unsafe.
Mm.
So they still feel as if they have some control,
yeah,
but they're giving a bit more, and they get a bit of a break as well. So they've been working bloody hard their entire life.
Yep.
Whereas if we just separate them and lock them in a little prison, they're going to get angry. Eventually, they're going to get out, and they'll be
direct
tearing the house down when they come.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, that's really good. To be fair, that's much better than my idea. It is about accepting it and getting it on board with what you are doing, and saying, "I understand that you're trying to protect me, but in a lot of ways, overprotection, you're hindering my development, our development, and you can." Be there for me when I need but other than that, let's just go on this journey together and let's progress a little bit more. It sounds weird because it's like, it's not like a voice in your head, but it is like a voice. It's not like a voice in your head from a sort of schizophrenic point of view, but it is a voice in your head. It's a sort of a daemon type thing. Have you watched the film Pinocchio?
The original, Yeah, many, many years ago. Jiminy Cricket.
Yeah, Jiminy Cricket. You need to watch it again because Jordan Peterson talks about this. It's brilliant, Pinocchio. It's all about like your conscience and your inner guide. And he's got all these. Pinocchio is, he's a puppet, so he's not a real boy. He's being controlled by something else, which is why he's got strings. And hence we all start off as we're all being controlled by other things that aren't ourselves, whether that be our sort of primal drives or our or the government or all the, you know, all these things. You can get very sort of conspiratory about things. And it's about his journey to becoming a real boy and how he's pulled around by all these false idols and things. And when you look at it through that perspective, and you've got Jiminy Cricket, who's like this thing that's trying to guide him and help him. And then, as we just spoke about, there's all these other voices effectively that are pulling him in the wrong direction. And, or, you know, they exist on the border of not being moral. But yeah, I would watch Google Jordan Peterson Pinocchio and then go and watch the film. And, and because it's really... It's really interesting, actually.
It does sound very, very interesting.
I think you would like it.
Actually, see it in a new light with the knowledge
exactly
that we possess today.
How does the body tell you what to do? When you say that, what do you mean? Is it?
Yeah. So when I say that, so if I wake up and I'm feeling tired, I check in with myself. I'll lie in bed, hand on heart, hand on belly. It's okay. What am I needing? Am I just tired, I'll have a bad night's sleep, or am I needing rest today? Am I hungry? Am I thirsty? What is my body craving in this moment? And if I'm thinking, okay, a little bit tired, but I have energy, I want to move, I'll go to the gym. If my body's saying I'm shattered, I'm sore, I'm achy, then I won't. Whereas before, I would wake up, loads of pre-workout, and just hit the gym. Say, oh, it's a different muscle group, it's fine. But it's more so with food. Like if I'm eating a food, I'll very consciously aware of how it makes me feel. I'll have a craving for a bag of sweets, but I won't buy it because I know that if I eat that, I will feel horrific. Yeah. So I don't get it. Even though my mind's saying, eat it, eat it, eat it. I say, no, I'd rather be in this discomfort now and feel better later than have a bit of a pleasure hit now and then feel horrible for the next day or two.
Absolutely.
So listening to what my body's needs and wants are.
That's brilliant. And not just the sort of in the moment needs, but the more beneficial over a slightly longer period of time needs as well, because, you know, you can crave something in the moment. And as you just quite rightly said, it not be the best interest for you the next day. You did a video. There's a video where you're talking about cravings and you said something really, really sort of insightful. And I was, do you remember the video you did about cravings where you said what a craving actually is?
Yeah. So I read that in a book. Craving is, what was it? It's, craving is just an unmet need. I think that's what it was.
Craving is.
Yeah. So same with that. Same with that of, so if I'm craving the sweets, something I'm not feeling right myself, so I'm craving something to distract myself or suppress it or feel something different. So instead, I could have a nice sweet cup of tea, or I can be with that feeling and say, okay, where is it stemming from? What is causing that craving? Where is that originally coming from? Which is the hard part, because there's so many ways nowadays to distract yourself.
Yeah, there are.
So you feel slightly uncomfortable, you go on your phone. You feel hungry, you go to the shops and buy something. No one has to sit in the discomfort anymore because there's so many ways to escape. Binging TV, your phone, porn, sugar, alcohol. So many ways to get away from the feelings inside and stay up here.
Yeah.
Like down here is where everything is. Like there's so much information in your body that no one is able to tap into, that many people aren't able to tap into.
There's so much information. There was some famous Greek philosopher who said that we're born with every single bit of knowledge that we'll ever need. And then as we grow, we forget it. I mean, it's quite a sort of outlandish statement, but it's interesting. I think we do know a lot more, inherently know a lot more, and it's about building that trust with our internal guide, which is a bit of a naff sort of phrase, but I think
yeah,
it's really true.
Trusting yeah, intuition, your internal guide, yeah, listening to the way you feel and not always needing to understand why you're feeling that way. That's so let's say they do this in Australia in some small like townships up in the outback. They'll be fishing in the river, and one person with a feeling, I need to leave, everyone goes. It's that sixth sense that something bad is going to happen, and they're so tapped into it, they listen to it. In the West, we've kind of pushed it aside and always try and understand it and figure out where it's come from. So we probably get eaten by a croc or something bad had happened. You ever got a feeling when you're walking down the street and thinking, okay, I should message this person. And then they'll pop up on your phone. That's an outside connection coming in, or feeling I shouldn't be here, but ignored it and something bad happened.
Yeah.
That happened to me. I thought it was paranoia because I was high. And then a few seconds later, the police rocked up. I even thought the police are going to be here. So if I had trusted my intuition then, I wouldn't have had a run-in with them.
Police, yeah.
So that's kind of where I want to be going, is having such an open channel that all these insights, intuition, messages can just flow through me and I not question them. I just listen to them, and obviously if they say do something stupid, I won't do it. I will question it. But if it's just little things that I think are quite random, I'll actually act on them rather than sit there thinking, where's that coming from?
Yeah, that's what you just said. That's brilliant. Being open to all the different channels of information to pass through you. That's because you've got intuition, you've got your sensing element, you've got, and as you talked about earlier, the emotions in the different parts of the body. And I just believe that there's so much about, we probably know like maybe 5% of what we possibly could know about the world and about the human body. And there's just so many things that we just have no idea, and they just take place and we're just completely blind to them. And it's, if you try and talk about them, you can be called, belief in voodoo and belief in sort of airy fairy and witchcraft sort of to the extremes. And I just think it's so wrong. I mean, sometimes it might be right, but a lot of the time, I think if enough people are saying things and feeling things as what you're talking about, then it needs to be more accepted into the mainstream than it is at the moment. And I think, I hope that that's what the future will bring.
Yeah. I think there is a massive wave of kind of awakening happening. Everyone's starting to put more attention onto their mental health and understand they're not just machines. Yeah. They are intuitive beings that feel things and move through things. And there's a more of an understanding that we need to feel all these things, and less, I'm hoping, the younger, as I haven't seen as much in the younger generations of be a stoic man, man up, suck it up, you'll be fine. There's a bit more understanding and kind of supportiveness.
Yeah, more empathy and consideration, 100%.
Now, a 12-year-old nowadays can access more images of naked women and porn and stuff than the richest of richest kings could access 100 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. It's so
true. And that is having a massive effect on young men. And the way that we perceive sex and women in general is completely diminished. There's no respect. We see them as objects. I used to see them as objects, something that I can get and I don't have to cherish. I can use because it's so readily available for you. There's nothing really special about it.
Yeah, it loses its value.
Whereas there is, in reality, there is such beauty in a healthy woman, a healthy feminine. I know you don't like masculine and feminine energies.
No, I do. I, I think we don't talk about masculine and feminine. We've got to stop saying man and woman, and we've got to start saying masculine and feminine. The reason I said earlier I hate saying masculinity is because it's just thrown around all the time now, and no one really knows what it means. And I don't know, it's just become a bit of a buzzword, and I feel like it triggers people when you say it, so I just be careful with it. But we've also, you are right, the objectification of women, but they're not help. Some women aren't helping themselves though. Like something like OnlyFans is not good. And I mean, you could say it's down to the men that are subscribing to these things. It's their fault.
It's not all on the men.
I think that's not fair. That's very unjust to say that. You know, we're all, because I kind of think like we're all gender fluid. Actually, I think this is where in the sense of we all have, some days I feel more, you know, what is considered masculine, and some days I feel more what's considered feminine. I reckon it's the same. And you understand what I mean when I say, but it's.
So for me, I'm not too informed about all the different wordings and gender fluid and all that kind of stuff. But from what you just said, I'd gather you have a healthy relationship to your feminine energy.
Definitely.
Like you're very comfortable in your masculine, but you can also be 100%. Comfortable in your feminine. And we're not, I think it's very unhealthy that when a kid says to their parents, I'm a woman, I'm a girl, they say, yes, you are. This is something that Jordan Peterson said, which I love. He said, when your child says to you, oh, daddy, I'm a girl now, instead of saying, no, you're not, or yes, you are, say, okay, tell me why you think you're a girl. Tell me what makes a girl. And I say, because I want to play with dolls. That's absolutely fine. Go and play with dolls.
Mm.
But don't encourage that and say you're a girl, because if I'd done that and I changed my mind, I wouldn't be able to tell them that I changed my mind, because I didn't have that ability to, like, that physical ability to say I'm a boy now. So I would have grown up thinking I was a girl, even though I thought I was a boy. So kind of being,
but equally don't discourage them, because if you discourage them, you're teaching them to not be comfortable in their feminine. I mean. Because, and that's what it's about. I mean, I used to do my weird little thing. I think it's very normal for like kids to mess around with sort of doing stereotypically female, stereotypically male things. Because, and also, if someone asks you, who is Rex, what's your surname? I do know, but who is Rex Haynes Henderson? I wouldn't say man. It wouldn't be near the top of my list of things to say. I wouldn't go for man as like a primary thing as who I am. I would say I'm someone who's interested in music. I'm interested in films. I would list the things. I wouldn't list my demographical identity as me first. I would list.
Interesting.
And I think that's where we get wrong. We put far too much emphasis on gender and things like that. And it's about the individual. It's about who you are as an individual. And that's another thing Jordan Peterson really advocates. It's the importance of the individual is being undervalued in the modern era. And we're putting too much emphasis on the group. You're a man, you're white, you're straight, you're an oppressor, you're a victim. All these labels where there's some truth to it some of the time. And, you know, everyone is oppressed and everyone has a susceptibility to be a victim and to be an oppressor. But you can't define a group of people by one characteristic. That's not fair. That's not wrong. Some people are born into the wrong body, maybe. And, you know, I'm not downplaying any of the people that are suffering out there at all. I completely believe it's very real. I've known people and I'm fully supportive of it, but identity and character and personality has to be more important than race, gender, sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who they are as a person, what they're interested in, what their values are.
Exactly.
That stuff. Yeah.
100%, 110%. Another thing is if you group everyone, then you can control them as a group and you can just move them around as a group. So you lose, you know, in psychology, there's a thing called, it's either a agentic state And it is, you know how like in football, in like sports games, everyone, you get like hooligans and then you and then you meet them outside group mentality. Group mentality and how groups can be swayed back and forth a lot, almost a lot easier than the individual. I think you might have already said, but what was your breaking point where you realized, what was the point where you thought, I need to make a change?
So I've had a couple breaking points. So I thought I hit my breaking point before, 2 years before I got sober. I'd had maybe 6 weeks clean, hitting the gym every day, really doing really, really well. And it's how I was sitting, massive arguments with myself on the way there and my addiction monster. Got to the house and I said, okay, I'll leave it a chance. If my dealer replies, then I'll get some. If not, then I'll leave it. He replied, got my first ever prostitute. Couldn't even keep it up because I was on so much coke. And then early hours of that morning, I recorded a 6-minute video of myself saying, I have a problem. I'm addicted to cocaine. I need to tell my mom and dad, you need help. And then in the hope that I'd watch it in the morning and woke up the next day, brushed it off. Oh, it was just a bad night. It'll be fine. I couldn't bring myself to watch it. And that loomed over me for 2 years. And then when I got to the 3-day benders, I was heavily in debt. And I mentioned this earlier. I called my brother asking for some money. And the fact that he recognized that I'd tried getting sober in the past. I'd had enough for maybe 3 weeks. I was like, this is awful. I'm hating this. I'm doing this just to feel normal. Like, why can't I stop? And then as soon as I had some cocaine in my system, I was fine. I was happy as life. I was loving it. It was only when I was near the end. That anxiety, that fear, that angst would all come bubbling back up and I'd run and get some more. And then that call with my brother just allowed me to just relax and let go and finally be open and honest the first time in my entire life. That was my breaking point. Just being able to be honest.
Truth.
And then little things kept happening after that. Yeah. There's a lot of power.
There's a lot of power in the truth.
And it's scary. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the things, another thing that Jordan Peterson talks about. And to be fair, Andrew Tate, I mean, I don't know if he's as truthful as he says he is. I'm certain he's not. But the truth is very, very, very powerful. And I think
you're better off having a tough conversation now than longing something out for months and resentment and stuff
because,
building underneath.
Going back to the monster thing, it's when by ignoring something, it's like a lie and it's like a monster that you let grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. And then once it gets to a certain size, you can't do anything about it anymore. And, you know, that's what lies. They compound. Yeah, that's it. They lies compound and they get and they build. So truth is the key. Truth and love. Yeah.
Love that.
Thank you for watching, everyone. This has been the Breaking White Podcast with Rex. I will leave all the socials, everything in the description of this video, and go check him out because he's got a great story to tell and he's doing what everyone should do, which is take from their own negative experiences and make the lives of other people better. So, you know, so much admiration for him. So, yeah, check him out and please subscribe and I'll see you on the next one.